and it's time for another movie review. And just like our last one, which was Time After Time, if you haven't seen it, we're going back to the well of kind of creepy 70s movies that played over and over again on the pay channels back in the day.
Yeah, this is a good one. I never forgot this one.
Yeah, this one is The Legacy from 1978.
And it's available on Blu-ray, too.
Yeah, it came out on Blu-ray in 2015.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because this movie, I feel like it doesn't get the same appreciation as some other kind of 70s horror movies, or even like 70s kind of haunted house kind of movies, maybe like Burnt Offerings or The Sentinel or ones like that. Which, yeah, okay, I admit those two are better movies. But this one, it really has like this weird, creepy kind of vibe, and it had like all these like weird death scenes that I think a lot of people, that made an impression on a lot of people back in the day, because I feel like it was one of those ones that just played over and over again. Yeah. And you know, it was one that you saw a lot when you were a kid, and a lot of the death scenes were like really horrific, so it kind of like stuck with you.
Yeah, if you like Legend of Hell House, you'll like this movie most.
Yeah, it's a similar kind of vibe to that.
And the evil, right? Similar to that.
Right. And it's also similar to, it's also kind of got a Hammer type of vibe too, which is probably due in small part to one of the screenwriters being Jimmy Sangster, who worked on a lot of the Hammer films. Now, ironically, his first draft of the screenplay for this was actually supposed to be like set in a like old ramshackle like hospital in Detroit or something like that, because he wanted to get away from all of the Hammer trappings of like, you know, old mansions and, you know, all that kind of like old school gothic kind of stuff. But then, you know, later iterations of the screenplay were like, no, we want to bring that stuff back. So The Legacy is actually set in this really, really cool, like, old English country house, and it's, like, all super creepy and atmospheric and everything like that. Now, it's funny because when I was doing research for this, I saw someone online that erroneously stated that this was a, because Roger Daltrey from The Who is in this movie in a small part, and someone stated that this was actually shot in Roger Daltrey's house in exchange for, you know, him having a small role in the movie. That is not the case. This is not Roger Daltrey's house. This is actually a place in Surrey called Loseley House. It was built in the 1500s, and it's there. You can tour it. It's actually owned by the Moore-Molyneux family, and they've actually lived there since the 1600s. Like, you know, their ancestors still live there, you know, and you can tour it and shit like that. But the house is like super cool. I know some of it was filmed in a studio, but I think all of the exteriors and most of the interiors were filmed in this particular house. Another fun fact, too, and this is just going back to our Time After Time review from last time, is that this is another case where the two principal leads on the movie met on the set of this movie and then later married, as Malcolm McDowell and Mary Steenburgen did on Time After Time. Catherine Ross, who had actually been in The Stepford Wives a year or two before this one, and Sam Elliott, who didn't do a lot of horror movies, but he was in this one. They met on the set of this and married a few years later and are still married to this day, 30-whatever years later. So that was another thing that happened. So this, like I said, this is a very strange movie.
Yeah, I wouldn't even really call it a horror movie per se. It's more like a satanic thriller.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. I mean, there was a lot of satanic type movies in the 70s.
Yeah.
As far as I know, this is the only one that was actually kind of okay with it.
Yeah, they were like, Satanists, you know. We're good
with
that.
It's all right.
Yeah. It's kind of cool.
The 70s.
It's the movie's about a high-level, powerful Satanist, all right, who calls forth six people to his deathbed so he can give out his legacy before he dies.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of reminds me of stuff you'd see from, like, The Dark Side of the Force with Sith, you know. It's kind of like that.
Yeah, but like I said, the interesting thing about this is that, yeah, they're, you know, they're supposedly in league with Satan and everything like that, but it's not condemned, and they don't really, they're not really bad guys. I mean, well,
no, more like Anton LaVey's version.
Yeah, the main
Satanism
guy isn't really a bad guy.
No, he's a cool guy.
Not that, you know, they really show.
And he's kind of dispensing justice on wrongdoers.
Yeah.
That's part of this deal here.
But like, but if you didn't know any of that, like, I think the cool thing, and a lot of the thing that a lot of people remember about this movie from the 70s, because like I said, from the 70s and early 80s, and it played on a lot of the premium cable channels. It was on HBO a lot and stuff like that. I think a lot of people remember this kind of creepy atmosphere, the creepy old house. And probably remember some of the death scenes because some of them were very memorable. Mm. A lot of them, I think, were probably based on Suspiria, which had came out a year earlier, because there's a couple particular shots in there that are very Suspiria-esque. So the whole thing is that this woman, Catherine Ross, she plays this woman named Maggie Walsh. She was like, I think a lot of reviews say interior decorator, but I'm pretty sure they said in the movie she was an architect.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Now, the boyfriend, played by Sam Elliott.
Yeah.
Is he, I guess he's maybe like her business partner, I'm guessing, or something.
He's so, very Burt Reynolds about himself in this movie, dude.
Very 70s
American leading
man. The 70s, you guys, it's like so much mustache.
Yeah. Hair suits.
So much chest hair.
Yeah.
And I was speculating.
And super macho and kind of, I don't want to say dumb, but yeah, kind of dumb.
Yeah, kind of dumb, macho, kind of misogynist, kind of.
I'll protect you.
Yeah, it was that kind of stuff. I actually was speculating while we were watching this movie. I was like, I wonder, I can't really remember, but in the 70s, did they have like mats of chest hair that you could like stick on, like a wig, but for your chest?
Yeah, you weave it in. Yeah,
I think they did. I kind of feel like they probably did.
Because, man, that dude's chest hair. That dude had more hair on his chest than I ever had on my head.
Right? Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It's pretty spectacular. So, so much. And a very, very large mustache. Everybody every man in the 70s looked like a porn star. What is that about? But they did, yeah. So the movie begins with Catherine Ross's character. So she's gotten this check for 50 large.
Yeah.
To come to England and work on this mysterious architectural project, evidently. Now, the first thing she does is she's calling the bank going, is this check legit? Can I, like, for real cash it and, like, spend the money and shit?
Yeah.
And you know, she gives them the thing. It's from, like, a company. What's it called? Wigham and Trimble or something like that.
Yeah, something like that.
And they're like, yeah, totally legit. And she's like, woot.
Yeah.
So, you know, so then she says to Sam Elliott, she's like, okay, well, they sent me $50,000, but they didn't really tell me anything about it or blah, blah, blah.
He's like, don't go.
Yeah, and he's like, and he's like, understandably skeptical. Yeah. He's like, man, I don't know about that.
Right.
But then she's like, oh, we could go early and have a vacation and all this other kind of stuff. And finally, she like talks him into it. So they go over there. There's like a weird, oh, and I should say too, that one of the weirdest things about this movie is the fucking musical choices.
Yeah,
this has some very, very strange. The opening theme was sung by Kiki D.
Yeah.
And it sounds more like it should be like a 70s era romantic comedy.
Yeah, it's weird.
Than a horror movie.
And then later on, there's like an escape scene where they're trying to escape.
Where they're trying to escape from the house.
This house, and they've stolen a car, and I believe it was a Rolls Royce, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, they sold horses, and then they sold, it was like this whole
and they're trying sequence. To get away from this house, and all roads lead right back to the house.
Yeah.
And during this escape scene, they're playing a damn 70s, like, folk song.
We're free. It's like, it doesn't have words, but it does.
I think it might only had some waka 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 in there, too.
I think it probably did have waka waka.
Totally bad choice of music.
It was very, very bizarre.
But the rest of the soundtrack was fine. It was just a weird anomaly about the 70s.
Yeah, it's like, and I feel like, well, not a lot of horror movies did that, but I don't know.
Took all the tension out of it.
It really did. It was very odd, and I was like, that's some very strange musical choices they made there.
You could graft in a couple of songs in place of that, or
and it would actually
improve it a lot.
Yeah, like you could just kind of change the score out and change the theme song.
Change
out.
That score.
I feel like a lot of movies in the 70s had to have like a quote unquote theme song.
Yeah, theme song, and there's waka waka in it and lyrics and shit like that. And that boy,
it just destroys
a movie.
I think it happens a lot. It happened a lot with TV shows too.
Yeah, bad
like
taste.
A lot of them, like 70s and 80s, all the theme songs had to have like lyrics and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, knock that off.
People had bad taste back then.
I guess so. Yeah. But yeah, so I was just reminded of that because they get over to England and there's like a montage. It's a montage of them like, you know, having a picnic in the grass and being all love, like, I love you, I love you.
Yeah, they're on a motorcycle tour.
Yeah, so they're taking a motorcycle ride around the countryside or whatever, and they get run off the road by a Rolls Royce.
Yeah, now they were on the way to this job that she had.
Evidently, I guess they were,
Right. It's actually not really clear exactly what happens. I think there may have been a scene missing.
But I'm not sure. Like,
you're not really sure whether or not she knows she's at the destination or not.
Yeah.
Which, when you see the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's like not super explained.
Right.
And it's not like it has to be, because I mean, like, I guess you could fill in the reasons. Some people might call it plot holes or whatever. So I don't think they ever really say whether she ended, I mean, where she ended up was obviously where she was supposed to end up, because there are all these like machinations and stuff like that. But I don't think that she knew. She gets run off the road by the Rolls Royce. And the guy that's in the back of the car, because it's driven by a chauffeur, of course, mm-hmm. but the guy, the rich dude that's in the back, this twee motherfucker named Jason Mount Olive,
who is British as hell.
He is all very British as fuck, British as hell, And he's like, oh, you know, I know a man in town and I'll take your motorcycle, because they're fine, but the motorcycle's all busted up.
He's the dude that hired her, but he doesn't ever tell her that. She goes to his house, which is a huge mansion. She's at the destination of the people that hired her, but she's not trying to leave as if she doesn't know.
Yeah, I don't think she knows.
She doesn't know that that's the people who've brought her to England.
Because, see, I thought that when one of the other guests get there, I think it was Jacques, the French guy.
Yeah.
I thought when he got there, he made some kind of comment like, she didn't come to see me first or something like that. So I thought maybe he had hired her.
Right.
But that doesn't really make any sense either.
Right.
So I'm not really sure like how that all happened. But at any rate, so she gets to this giant house and they think they're only going to be there for tea or until their motorcycle is fixed or whatever. But then they get led upstairs and creepy Nurse Adams, who's like super freaky.
Yeah.
And she's all like, oh, well, we have a room ready for you. And she's like, well, what the fuck? We're not supposed to, you know, we weren't going to stay overnight. We were just staying for tea until the motorcycle fixed.
Yeah. And it's weird because they weasel their way into making them to stay overnight.
Right.
And then they break their motorcycle so they can't leave.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get out of this house.
Yeah.
But she's at her destination and they never tell her.
And they never tell
her. It's weird.
Because the weird thing about it is that, so they, I mean, they're not as weirded out. Like, I mean, I don't know. I guess it doesn't seem that weird, but like, they're just like, oh, well, you know, it'll take a long time and everything's closed now and they won't fix your motorcycle till tomorrow. So why don't you just stay over and blah, blah, blah. So they're all just like, okay, let's have sex, whatever.
Yeah.
But then, you know what I mean? They just roll right with it. But then, so Sam Elliott and his huge porn stash are looking out the window and he sees a helicopter landing and all these like important rich ass looking people are getting out.
And rock stars.
Yeah. And shit like that. And including the guy who was the guy that did the time warp in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. He was also a Bond villain too. But every time I saw him in this movie, I kept going, it's just a jump to the left.
So
it's all these, that guy.
All these rich, famous and powerful people show up and they're having some kind of a meeting here.
Yeah.
And she's been invited.
And they all know who she is.
They all know who she is.
And they're all like, oh, there she is. And she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I'm just
like,
you know, they all know who she is.
She has no idea why.
And then they said that, well, you know, Mr. Mount Olive is on his deathbed and he's called us all here so we can inherit his legacy.
Yeah, or
something. And she's like, deathbed? I just saw him. He ran me off the road. He looked totally fine. They looked at her like she's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she gets up there to the room where they're keeping him. You know, the nurse takes him up there and they're all sitting down on these chairs. And Mount Olive is behind all these curtains, you know.
Yeah, it's like all these plastic curtains. Yeah, there's all the IV bags and shit like that everywhere.
Yeah, and he tells that nurse to bring that American woman up to her so he can give her a ring. And he puts a ring on her finger. He actually grabs her and pulls her in and slips
with
his ring.
With his scary monster
ring. Right, and then lets her go. And she can't get the ring back off. She, you know, she tried later on. She never could.
And now that's one of the things that we were kind of discussing while we were talking about doing this movie review is that, so when she goes in the room, like the day after the motorcycle accident, Jason Mount Olive pretty much is laying in bed looking like the Toxic Avenger, right?
Yeah.
So, but he looked totally normal the day before. So we're wondering, okay, so do you remember at the beginning of the movie after he's still in the back of the limousine or the Rolls Royce, whatever, and they get out.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I'm just going to stay in here for a minute. And then he takes some pills.
Right.
So I don't know if they're saying that these pills are making him look normal for a short amount of time.
It's just unclear.
Or if he was like some kind of psychic projection.
Yeah.
Because I don't think he ever got out of the bed. Because how could he was like hooked up to all this
shit.
How could he be running around like the day before?
And also look at his hair. His hair was like two or three feet long, and he was just, and he was ancient looking.
Yeah.
And one of his eyes was just like a glassy ball, you know.
And it was like halfway down his head and stuff, shit like that.
I think it was an astral projection of him.
That's what I'm thinking. But then why the pills? I don't know. So that's what I mean.
Just part of the illusion.
I guess so. It just seemed weird to me, so I couldn't like figure out why.
So after Mount Olive puts that ring on her finger, he sends her back over there with the rest of them and basically says, only one of you is going to inherit my powers, and I don't care what, you know, you guys are going to have to fight it out for it.
Yeah, because, I mean, essentially, I think that they... It's also not clear how much of this stuff the people that got summoned to the house knew.
Yeah, I don't think they know much.
Right. I was kind of under the impression that, you know, they got called to the house because I think one of them even said at one point, oh, you know, Jason Mount Olive, he's been really good to us and generous and stuff like that. And so when he calls, we come. Mm. So they knew he was dying. So I'm guessing they assumed that, well, he's calling us there to like read his will or give us his shit or whatever.
Right.
But then they get there and he's like, well, basically only one of you is getting it. And kind of implies that he wants them to fight each other
for it. To fight each other to the death for it, yeah.
But, you know.
And I think from here on out in this retrospective that we have to kind of be kind of vague because I don't want to put a bunch of spoilers because chances are people haven't seen this movie.
Yeah,
what ends up what ends up happening is that they start dying and killing each other. But the way it's done is awful weird. It makes it kind of ends up looking like accidents.
Quote, unquote.
Quote, unquote. That's really where this story is in how these people die when you think about it. That's really what this movie is about.
Yeah.
And then at the end, you find out what the true deal was and why she's there. It's pretty cool.
Like a lot of people have said that the movie has like some kind of ridiculous elements. It doesn't really explain itself very well, but in a way,
I think it doesn't really have to.
I don't think it really has to. Yeah. It's like you just kind of have to sit back and like just roll with it.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of sense if you think about it too much. Right.
Mount Olive is a guy kind of like the Sith Emperor. You know what I mean? And all these other people are kind of like, they're satanic witches. They're kind of like junior level Sith. And they're fighting for his power or getting killed over his power. That's what's going on.
And there's like, there's ambiguity about, you know, because at first it seems like, you know, was this just, I don't even think at first, because the first death was that woman, right?
Yeah, well, they show you how they're dying, but, you know, they're being killed by basically kind of like force powers is what's killing them. Magic.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah,
psychic abilities.
But like I said, one thing.
Well, some of them die that way. Other ones don't. Yeah.
One thing I kind of love about this is they're having this big, you know, the big meal or whatever. And by this point, like Catherine Ross's character has kind of started to suspect that maybe there's like some Satanist kind of shenanigans going on.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, so you guys all like into black magic or, and then they're all just like, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
of course.
No big.
Yeah.
Which I thought was very funny.
And they're like, you know, we don't all just fly around on broomsticks.
Yeah, anymore. Roger Daltrey said that. Yeah. So it's like, I think this is, I mean, I haven't seen every like horror movie from the 70s or anything like that. But I think this is the only one that explicitly does not make Satanism necessarily, doesn't, just because they're Satanists doesn't necessarily make them bad guys.
No, and it there's no condemnation of it.
Not really. No. I mean, they just kind of portray it as, oh, it's a different lifestyle.
Yeah.
And like I said, the Jason Mount Olive character, I mean, according to, within the film's universe and what we know about him and stuff like that, he doesn't seem like a straight up bad guy.
No, once you find out what the real deal was and why these people were called forth, you can kind of understand why it went that way.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to ruin too much of it. I don't want to make
too and also the ending of this is crazy. It's just, it's crazy because it's not really what you would expect.
No, it's exactly the opposite of what you expect.
But in a way, and like, I love the ending
of
this.
That's what made it, had a very non-70s ending.
In a way, I kind of love the ending of this because it's almost kind of like, that's totally what would happen if this really went down.
If somebody came at you with this deal, you'd go, that's what you'd do.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I mean.
Right.
And also, I kind of liked that. I mean, I think we mentioned Sam Elliott's terrible chest hair and his epic porn stash. Also, you get to see his bare ass in this one if you're into that. And
it's a girl thing.
So, well, I don't know. I'm not into Sam Elliott, but some people like that.
I'm not into Sam Elliott either.
Yeah. I like him as an actor. I'm just saying I don't like that's, I don't know, it's not my type. But, you know, some people like that kind of rugged cowboy type of thing. But also, I wanted to mention, do you remember the part that we laughed at the most? Because I was going to say that this movie actually has a pretty good, almost kind of like feminist undertone, because Catherine Ross is the one with the job. I mean, the boyfriend is just along for the ride. He's not really, he wasn't even supposed to come with her. And then the way it ends up at the end, he's just kind of like, oh, well, suppose so.
Yeah, that's right.
He just goes along. But the funny thing, I was going to mention that one scene.
Sam Elliott, he's so good looking. He doesn't have to work. Yeah. The women's just going to take care of him.
They're just going to take care of him. I guess she's going to have to now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we were mentioning that one scene where he's watching that other woman, one of the actresses that came swimming around in the pool.
That was weird.
Like, he just kind of wondered, he's just like, hey, I'm just going to creepily leer at you. Is that okay? And she's like, whatevs.
And it's like, and he's got a beer and it's like, no big deal.
Yeah, he's just like drinking a beer and watching this woman swim. Yeah. So I was like, okay, that's not creepy at all. Yeah. And then his girlfriend comes in and is all like, what you doing? You like watching these other chicks swim.
Browsing.
That's what he said.
Yeah. And she's like cool with it.
And he's just all cool with
it. So I guess it must have been some kind of open relationship.
Maybe.
Yeah, just browsing.
So I'm like, oh my God, you normally get popped. If I would say some
shit like that, you smack me.
I would.
Yeah, I'm just looking,
and deservedly
looking
so.
At the next piece of ass.
Right. That's exactly what it's
what he's talking about.
We just like, we shrieked with laughter at that point. Because I was like, oh my God, I can't believe he just said that. Yeah. Oh, the 70s.
And he got away with it.
Like I said, she didn't even hit him on the arm or nothing.
No, like, she's just like, oh. And then she's looking.
And then she checked it out, too. I'm like, oh, so that's how it is.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
It's all that, all that 70s free love.
I guess so. All right. But like I said, you could see that there was like a lot of chemistry between the two of them. So like I said, it wasn't surprising that they married afterward. And they're still married now, even though they're both old as shit. Just like we are.
Yeah, it's a good movie, though.
But yeah, it's definitely not, like I said, it's probably not up there with like the classics of the 70s and stuff like that.
No, but it's a forgotten one.
But it's for sure
it's worth
seeing. One that's kind of forgotten and it's worth seeing.
Yeah.
And in a way, it's almost, parts of it are so ridiculous, but it takes itself so seriously that it like turns around and becomes awesome again.
Yeah.
Like the one scene where he throws the nurse down the stairs.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty cool.
I'm not going to ruin that either.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Also, there's a lot of kitties in this movie, and I love kitties.
Yeah.
And especially a really pretty white kitty with two different colored
eyes. Yeah, that's true. And it has a face like a fox almost.
Yeah.
Long snout on it.
And kind of smiling and stuff. Yeah. It's an awesome kitty.
It's a cool. It's a cool flick because it's not stereotypical.
Yeah, it's definitely a weird one.
Yeah.
So if you haven't seen it, I would recommend it. That's why, I mean, normally we wouldn't care about spoilers, but I kind of feel like a lot of people probably haven't seen this one.
Yeah, it's kind of a rare movie.
And you kind of have to, like a lot of the shit that happens, you kind of have to see it.
And you have to reflect back on it after you've seen it.
Yeah.
And go, oh, okay, I know what they're.
And like I said, if you're going to watch it, like just get yourself in a kind of 70s, quasi Hammer kind of mindset, and don't think too much about the plot or nothing. Just like kind of just watch it.
Yeah, well, everything happens for a purpose, though.
It does, but like if you think about it too hard after, you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the more we were talking about it and thinking about it, I was like, oh yeah, why is that like that? And what's that about? And who is this person? And like, because, you know, there was the whole thing about the time warp guy that I kept, that's what I kept calling him, because I couldn't remember his character's name. But the guy from Rocky Horror, and him like showing Catherine Ross's character, the portrait that looked like her. And he had the book.
Yeah.
And then
I think that one guy knew
was
the most.
Was he the only one that knew about the deal? Because it didn't seem like most of the other people knew. Like, they kind of knew what was going on, but not. They didn't, like, really make it clear how much the other people knew.
You see, I don't think they really knew the full deal. That's why they went along with it, and that's why certain things happened. After she was the last one, Mount Olive grabs her and tells her exactly what it is that she has to do, and that's what he did. He laid it out.
Right.
He says, you have to get this amount of people, this is what you have to do, and that's what.
Yeah.
So.
But like I said,
I don't think they knew that.
The time warp guy knew it, though, because he had the book.
Okay.
And the book said that in it.
It did it? Okay.
And because he gave it to her. And he told her to read it.
Okay.
So, obviously, he knew, but the other people didn't seem to.
They didn't even seem to care why they were there, the other ones.
Because when shit started to happen, they all seemed surprised.
Yeah, I think they thought they were going to get handouts. That's why I think they thought they were there.
I feel like that too. Yeah. I think that was kind of the implication.
I think they thought they were going to get money.
Right.
Yeah, and that's not what they were there for.
Although, like I said, even though, like I said, they all seemed surprised because like all of them started getting bumped off.
Yeah.
And then a couple of them made the point. It's like, why would anybody kill anybody? You know, of what for need... money? We don't need it.
Right.
Because they were already rich as fuck.
Well, the guy with the elephant gun went berserk.
Jock. Yeah.
Jock. He went. I think he said, oh, okay, we're supposed to kill each other.
Yeah.
Because that's what, you know, because he went on a rampage. So, you know.
But yeah, so like I said, you can't really think too hard about it, but because there will be plot holes. But it's actually, if you watch it just like for the atmosphere and just like the weirdness and stuff like that, and the death scenes are actually pretty creepy.
Yeah.
I mean, they stuck with me over the years.
Yeah, they do. Now, you know, it's not a modern movie. Nowadays, they do CG, but I think just the way that they're shown, that's effective.
Yeah, I think so too. And like I said, it was something that really stuck with you if you saw it back in the day. And like I said, I think a lot of them were based on Suspiria too, because there were very Suspiria-like things.
Yeah.
But, you know, overall, like I said, if you haven't seen it, you should check it out. It came out on Blu-ray in 2015. There's also a DVD version of it, although the transfer isn't terrific and there aren't really that many extras on it. The Blu-ray has a bunch of extras on it.
Going back to the plot holes, though, like we were talking about, I still have a feeling that a couple of scenes got cut out.
Well, probably. I mean, every movie has that. That's
probably why.
And maybe that's why that, you know, it wasn't in continuity and a couple things were just unclear.
Yeah, I think some stuff ended up on the cutting room floor.
It probably did. But yeah, like I said, if you don't think about it too much, it's actually a pretty good, like, atmospheric sort of weird 70s creepy old house movie. So if you're into that, then probably...
Creepy old Satanist movie, really.
Creepy old Satanist movie, yeah, that too. So if you're into that kind of thing...
Satanic witches.
That sounds like something you like, then probably you should check it out. And that'll do it for this latest movie review. Yeah. As always, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast and also our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com if you would like to support the show. And also make sure to tune in to our regular episodes that are put up every Tuesday. And we will see you next time. Bye.